Ahoy, hoy, everybody, and welcome to Talking Simpsons, where more testicles mean more iron. I'm your host, the guff-speaking work slacker, Bob Mackey, and this is the Laser Time Podcast Network's chronological exploration of The Simpsons. Who else is here with me today?
I'm Henry Gilbert, and I knew the dog before he came to class.
Who else?
Italian stereotype Chris Antista.
And special guest.
I'm Dave Rudden, and my geode must be acknowledged.
I will do that after the show, Dave. And today's episode is Sweet Seymour Skinner's Badass Song.
More testicles mean more iron.
What a vile sound effect.
I just love the Foley on that. I wanted
more
to. That's
iron.
Why I wanted to use it.
Dorsch never should have shot that film in college.
Today's episode aired on April 28th, 1994. And as always, Chris will tell us what happened on this day in history.
A blue Bobby. Nelson Mandela is victorious in South Africa's first free election. Yeah. Chant, an album of Benedictine monks, is on the top of the charts. And Edward Furlong follows up Terminator 2 with the unforgettable brain scan.
Whoa.
I know they would put End Apartheid Now posters in Lisa's room to piss people off in the early seasons.
Yeah, 92. That's on the wall in her room when Homer is, after she calls him a baboon in the...
Baboon!
Yeah. It's difficult to remember the pro-apartheid people.
They're out there.
The Simpsons universe in 1 year or so will be introduced to the Benedictine monks via the Rappin' Rabbis.
Yes,
That was
written by the Critic guys, who also on The Critic did the joke about the singing monks too. They really got into these monks.
It was a needless trend. It topped the charts for like almost the entire year.
My mom bought the CD and I was like, why?
It was literally 20-year-old recordings of Benedictine monks, and I think They sunk it up to like Pleasant Beats, and it sold incredibly well.
Pop culture is really weird.
It is.
Well, so this was a major night in Simpsons history.
Yes,
and this is a major time for Talking Simpsons too, because this is our 100th episode of regular Simpsons. I guess if you were to add it up, like 5-6 episodes ago was our 100th episode.
Yeah, we're on like 107 now, I guess. But who's counting? I am.
Yes. I know that for Laser Time's 100th episode, we decided to do a show just called Simpsons Reference to talk about our favorite show and explain half the references younger people have been hearing. And the episode art we used is from the promotional wave for this episode.
Bart's eyes are the two zeros in 100.
And the 100th night when it showed, it was a full-on celebration from Fox. They were definitely celebrating, like, other than, I would guess, Married with Children hit it first, but this had to be the second Fox show ever to hit 100 episodes.
I think so. Probably excluding Cops.
Cops doesn't count.
like
they
that,
have
1,000
episodes of Cops. But that they were ready to celebrate the legacy of The Simpsons, as Dave Merkin points out on the commentary, but the real reason companies celebrate 100 episodes of a show is because that is the typical syndication thing. Sometimes if shows got canceled at like 95, they'll still just do it. They're like, Grace Under Fire got to 96 episodes. Mm-hmm. Let's just do it.
And this coming fall would be The Simpsons entering syndication for the first time.
Yes. So they all know how rich they're going to get off of that syndication money with 100 episodes. So that was a huge deal. Mm-hmm. And the night of it, they aired this next two in the 8:30 slot is technically the first-ish episode. They show Bart the Genius, which it is the second production episode and the second aired episode, but it went after the Christmas special, and I believe in Fox's mind, they're like, well, that was the Christmas special, not the first episode. So
also, why air a Christmas episode in April?
So you see it next to Bart the Genius, and just imagine, even then, seeing 100 next to Bart the Genius, you could just see how far the show has come.
Yeah, Bart the Genius is like Bronze Age compared to this Simpsons episode.
Well, on Patreon.com/TalkingSimpsons, we did a viewing of the original pilot that they didn't air, and Bart the General is about 9% better than that, I would say. It's not that much better animation.
It's true. A few things I wanted to bring up. So this is the 100th episode, and I feel like it's a landmark in some cases in that it's the deepest exploration of Skinner's life to date.
Yeah. Yeah.
And season 5 so far, I think you'll agree with me, has just been about humiliating him at every turn. Every time we see him, he's the most pathetic, like just a petty bachelor. Yeah. We don't know he's a virgin yet, but it's apparent.
but a sad man with no life and no hobbies.
Yeah, and this episode is written by Bill Oakley and Josh Weinstein. Stein, who had run season 7 and 8. Mm. And it's clear that they wanted to call back to season 3. This is very much a season 3 in tone episode. After the great wackiness of Merkin, we get a more grounded, down-to-earth, like solid story, so much that Homer is kind of pushed out of it.
Yeah, it's insane.
And there are many cut scenes with Homer in them. I mean, Homer is going to be a bigger part of this plot to get Ned out as the principal. But in some ways, I feel like this is Oakley and Weinstein kind of auditioning to be showrunners. Mm. This is the first episode that they've written, I feel, that is wholly theirs. Mm. It has all of their trademark stuff and all of the emotion they loved in season 3. And season 3 is their favorite Simpsons season. They were fans of the show before joining to write for it. And I feel like this is really a callback to those more emotional, more grounded years of the show.
Yeah, truly, we were rewatching this for the first time. It feels absolutely like a season 7 episode dropped into season 5. And it has all the things they do well. If we ever get to interview Oakley again, or we're lucky enough to talk to Weinstein, I'd love to ask them, like, is this what got you to be showrunners? Like, is this what you proved? Because it also feels like they had some more hands-offness on this from Merkin. Like, there weren't as many Merkin-y things. Like, yes, the Quickie Mart explodes, but there are fewer crazy things. Everything is so much more grounded than this. Homer is not the monster. He's Captain Crazy. He's none of that stuff. So I think it is Captain Wacky.
It was intentional that this was moved to be the 100th episode. What is that?
Yes,
we
they
find
well,
that out for sure.
Their reasoning for it is that they wanted a Bart focused one. Mm. They wanted a Bart one, and they talk about it. And I remember it at the time too. They advertised like Bart's biggest prank ever, and it's like
right,
yeah,
it's not a prank.
He accidentally yes, does something. He's done so many better pranks. In just Burns' Air, he does so many great pranks.
That's a much better prank. Yeah, this and he feels regret. I mean, Bart is so human. Skinner so human. Yeah. And one other thing, the title of this episode, I had no idea what it meant
That's
until
insane.
Like 10 years ago. It's a reference to the 1971 blaxploitation movie Sweet Sweetback's Badass Song with the correct amount of A's and S's, which is the incorrect amount. And it is a movie by Melvin Van Peebles. And I was going to have the trailer play, but it's just a bunch of like random scenes and it doesn't make sense in audio. But I found out this movie was it came into being because Bill Cosby funded it, which is astounding to me. But I'm sure it's great. I haven't seen it.
Melvin Van Peebles chased down that money, and it's a beautiful story because Mario Van Peebles, I think 10 years ago, made a movie called Badass about where he played his father making this movie.
I remember in that movie that he, and it's the same cover art too, like it's so I learned all about the Peebles family legacy when I worked at a mom and pop video store and watched those films. And yeah, the weird thing in Badass is that Mario Van Peebles is playing his father cheating on his mother during the filming
awkward.
Of it. It's just like, this is weird. But Mario Van Peebles is a weird guy, so that's cool. But so, yeah, this has nothing to do with the plot
nothing
of that film.
That.
Yeah, and one other pre-show thing is that my favorite thing in this episode, well, one of my favorite things in this episode is the couch gag is them showing their gratitude to Fox by tearing the bug off the screen and stomping on
that
it.
That is great,
yeah. Just like...
Yeah, the special chalkboard gag, too. I will not celebrate meaningless milestones.
And it is pretty meaningless, because they're now on what? Are they going towards 700 now?
Yeah. I just saw they're doing the table reading in the last week of 634.
Yeah.
But isn't that, it's like...
They'll get up to episode 666, guaranteed.
If they're not renewed the renewals. Again, it's 666.
Well, 70% of restaurants closed the first year, but like it's a miracle for a show to make it to 100 episodes, let alone seven times over.
I really think after 300, they stopped making these events every 100th.
They made it for 500. 500 before.
And they mention it in the 600th, I believe. Yeah. No, that was 500 too.
Well,
and 400.
I think it was. Oh yeah, Merkin. They also he made a joke at the party for the 300th episode. He said the joke, "We're halfway there," and it was true. And before we get into the episode, the last thing I wanted to is it's something they don't do anymore of having a theme night where they have celebrities congratulate a show on a milestone. And so you can tell they put a lot of work into finding all the past Simpsons guest stars they could to congratulate the show on 100 episodes. And they go through the entire hour of the celebration, which is Skinner's Badass Song, followed by Bart the Genius. And so I think we should just listen to all of them in a row here.
Are you comfortable in there, Luke Perry?
You know, I've been shot out of a lot of cannons in my day, but it's nothing like your first time. Congratulations to The Simpsons on their 100th episode.
The Simpsons 100th episode celebration continues.
We got Luke Perry in there.
We did a promo for us.
Did it? Yes. We have our own Luke Perry promo.
To everyone in the sleepy town of Springfield.
Weren't you one of the little rascals?
May you live long and prosper.
I have no idea who that guy is.
He did the hand thing.
Keep watching the ski.
We have R.I.P. Leonard Nimoy. And this is I love this is a big one because he's technically on like a competing network at a competing time.
He's in the height of Frasierdom.
Mm-hmm.
Hello, Kelsey Grammer here.
You have such a beautiful voice.
Guilty as charged. Felicitations to the people who bring The Simpsons to life. May you make 100 more.
I wonder if he's in the studio.
Hi, Danny DeVito here to congratulate The Simpsons on their 100th show.
Uncle Herb, can I sit over the side?
Ha, your brains out. Thank God I'm not related to him in real life.
The Simpsons 100th episode celebration.
And on to...
All the best on their 100th episode.
I am thrilled.
And as Fat Tony would say... Thanks for making me an offer I couldn't refuse.
That's he does great. The voice wrong.
Why? He sounds more like Mo.
Joe Montana.
He did not get the
level of celebrity to get a call out.
He's
and
famous enough.
They're taking whoever
at the time,
they can get.
Joe Montana was top line in films and shit.
I did like Kelsey Grammer.
Airheads, hello?
This is Kelsey Grammer. Thank you for not inviting me on to season 5 in any way.
Well, he looks like he's at a recording of The Simpsons.
Yeah. And then lastly, this is the oddball one.
I'd like to take this moment to sing the praises of The Simpsons. Hey, good to see you. Congratulations on your 100th show.
Hey, passionless read from Tony Bennett. Miraculously still alive.
Can I get another scotch, please?
And Leonard Nimoy isn't.
No. I'm reading this as slowly as I can.
And I would like to give a shout out to Alec Baldwin's impression of you. Very, very good.
So this is the first episode directed by Bob Anderson. You can definitely see the silver.
See if I can almost get it in here.
What's that?
Wow!
Oh,
there. Wow, Bob.
Thank you. Well, okay, Bob Anderson. You can definitely see the David Silverman influence in his work. And he has been with The Simpsons ever since. He's now the animation director. So he's been with The Simpsons for over 20 years now.
Wow, I didn't know he graduated into animation director.
Yeah, so now he controls all the directors.
I mean, you got to have somebody. That is what Silverman graduated into in season 5, which, because it was exhausting, it's crazy to think they expected, like, okay, you're in charge of all the other directors, but still, you know, do your own episodes, like 3 a season. Like,
here's
that's
some
fine,
more work.
Right? Yeah, I just love those videos of celebrities congratulating things. Yeah. They don't do that anymore. Yeah. Dave, you shared
the 100 Years of Chan.
I love that.
From Tim and Eric's awesome show.
It's such an old thing that Tim and Eric made fun of it. Which is like, they love to make fun of old TV tropes.
Congratulations, Jackie Chan, for 100 years of entertainment.
Congratulations, 100 years in the business, Jackie Chan. Peace.
But all right, let's really get into this episode. Yeah, this is my favorite episode of season 5.
I'm with you, Henry.
Wow, that's Dave, I thought you said the same thing.
I really like it, and I have a personal connection to this episode, but I'm more of Homer Los Flanders, just how weird it is.
Stampy, stampy, stampy.
I think I said it before, but Skinner is my favorite character. I'm not just ripping off Bill Oakley by saying that. He really is. I love the kind of jokes that come out of him, and I like the patheticness, but the empathy we feel for him as this like kind of tortured soul. Yeah.
I would go as far to say there's no better episode of The Simpsons that goes far into a non-Simpsons character. This is my best non-Simpsons focus.
And this
Simpsons
is a good exploration of like this version of Skinner, the sad, kind of boring dullard type. The last episode I can really remember that he was a big part of was the one where he married or was dating Patty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's like, that wasn't really the same version of Skinner.
Not really, no.
He was left with a little dignity.
We assume that he didn't live with his mother at that point. No. I don't think he did either. He was just a single man. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
you know?
He was a single man, a possible homosexual. That's all we knew about it then. This episode, because this is why I did feel like the 100th episode intentionally, only at the very start, because this is very much them recognizing a legacy and thinking about what will people be watching this in 20 years. And well, first off, they start with Joe Cocker's cover of Little Help for My Friends, and unlike the cheapskates at Wonder Years, they paid to have it on the DVD.
Isn't that disheartening? Yeah. If you wanted a ref, did you have a clip of the song?
Yeah, you can hear it in this opening clip here.
We're gonna eat this up at show and tell.
I'm not sure if I'm comfortable with the idea of your classmates laughing on our family's private moments. How would you like it if 20 years from now people were laughing at things you did?
Not likely. Come on, have a sense of humor about yourself.
I'm a big boy today.
sitting on the turlet.
I love at least the laughs of that.
And I just hearing you talk about it, I brought it up on the laser time we did about The Simpsons legacy, that I remember watching The Wonder Years with my father, debuted after the Super Bowl, and it was like a show I could connect to because the character was my age.
I watched it all, yeah.
It's a great show, but it's nostalgic because it's showing the period my father grew up in. The Simpsons has existed longer than that period, from 1969 to 1988. Wow. So you can watch The Simpsons as both a show you like and as Wonder Years nostalgia. It's set 20 years ago. They're showing a Wonder Years parody, and there's no reason to do that. I grabbed the Wonder Years new song, and it just makes me so mad.
It's like the Married with Children new song, right?
I just had an old clip. Let me see how much you'll tolerate it.
What would you do?
Horrifying.
Right, tapping out.
Horrifying.
Tapping out.
Just scroll to the end, because it just gets even worse. Who are you?
I will say at least they did a cover and didn't replace it. My question is, though...
Can I show you the worst example?
Sure.
I captured this a long time ago. I don't have a wiki-esque memory of what song was in the Wonder Years, and I know they had to remove some.
Yeah.
I immediately knew what song they had to remove, and they didn't get... They made like a non-funny Weird Al parody.
Oh, no.
And so that's... the title might give it away. This is awful. I love it so much.
There was only one thing I was sure of. I was a man on fire.
Oh, this is so bad. Sorry, Doors fans.
Love waits for no one. Who knows where it's gonna go?
Oh boy.
Passion like an ember glowing.
Okay.
Tony.
Control. Lighting up the darkest night.
He has fire in there.
It is bitter irony. The Simpsons was allowed to retain the correct song in its parody of the show that could not retain the correct song.
My question, though, is do you think the Wonder Years people wanted the Beatles version of that song but knew they could never get it, so they went for the Joe Cocker version?
Yeah, the Joe Cocker... Well, but then the Wonder Years ended up making the Joe Cocker version even more iconic.
I think so,
yeah.
I heard it first. I know I heard it a billion times because of the Wonder Years. When I heard the Beatles one, I'm like, what is this?
and that song I don't think would be appropriate for the Wonder Years.
No, not really.
You need more of a reflective, sad kind like Joe Cocker.
Yeah, no offense, Beatles. And, that's horseshit calliope baby music.
And so, when it comes to music licensing on DVDs, it's crippled many shows from being complete. But The Simpsons is on such a level that they know they could spend $2 million on re-licensing old songs and they'll still make a profit.
So, I wish they hadn't spent so much time on Simpsons DVDs, because they routinely every year entered into the top 10 DVDs sold period. But they Groening was really adamant about one season per year. So it took for fucking ever. Yeah. It took so long, and The Simpsons have been on so long.
I mean,
the format is dead.
Every episode needed commentary. That was the thing.
I'm glad they did that.
Like, once in a while, they would get to in a year, but it would be like a rare occasion.
So this is the 100th episode of Talking Simpsons. We are 10 seconds into the episode and 20 minutes into this recording. But it's a tradition that we go too far in every joke.
Oh, I don't know if either of you guys did the research for this, but when he says, "Will people still be laughing at us 20 years from now?" I looked up what episode aired 20 years from this one, and the episode was "What to Expect When Bart's Expecting" from season 25.
Great.
So I don't think people were still laughing at him 20 years from now. But actually,
sick burn, you Simpsons writers.
The episode after that was the Lego episode. They had a Lego episode. So that's still, I mean, they're at least still notable 25 years or 20 years later.
I must over-explain or go too far into one joke in this opening bit where Homer is showing off his Sebastian Cabot beard book, and his beard catches on fire. And I must tell you who Sebastian Cabot is. He was the lesser Mr. Belvedere. He played Mr. French on A Family Affair. It was the 70s Mr. Belvedere type sitcom in which a very well-spoken aristocratic butler was taking care of these precocious children. And he was sort of like an Orson Welles figure. He had a very nice voice and everything. Yeah. But Chris, he played Bagheera in The Jungle Book.
Oh,
and
shit.
He was the narrator of the Disney Winnie the Pooh shorts.
Yes.
But
yes.
One thing he did was a spoken word version of Like a Rolling Stone. And I have it directly at that part of the song. Henry, please.
How does it feel? How does it feel to be without a home? Like a complete unknown. Like a Rolling Stone. We've gone to the finest school, all right, Miss Lonely. But you know you only used to get juiced in it.
What?
And nobody ever taught you how to live on the street.
What?
And now you gotta get used to it. You said you'd never compromise with the mystery tramp.
It sounds way different when he says, you said you'd never compromise with a mystery tramp.
How does it feel? Like a rolling stone.
Have the Ramones killed.
and pooing up the honey tree.
Wow, that is a weird one to do. Yeah. But people would just buy an album with a famous voice. Like, that's a great voice. Sebastian has a great voice.
I mean, he is a great voice, but I feel like this weird, like, spoken word shit was all over the place. I mean, Shatner, of course, doing Rocket Man that everyone remembers, even though it was only televised once. It's this, like, thing that we all know because someone recorded it.
It's nuts that someone had that foresight. Yeah. Thank God I could see it.
And it's for a book of beards. It's a beard book, and I mean, he's got it all. I looked at a few pictures of him from the time. He's got a good beard.
It's a pretty good beard.
I mean, Mr. French, who he played, had like he had a beard and it was pretty well groomed.
I guess, you know, maybe it's like how porn from a long time ago feels different now, because it's like, we've seen so much escalation in porn. It's the same with, like, well, I've seen crazy mega beards on everybody just walking down the street in San Francisco. So a quality average beard is just like, okay, I guess.
It's funny, like, having a beard was a marker of the late 70s, but beards are so back. And I can't
back
grow
in a big
one, I'm
way.
Sorry.
No, I hate it. I can't. I have very patchy hair on my face. It's I did like that joke of Bart. They filmed Bart on a toilet, and he's like, "Well, crap." But though it also makes it feel, the Simpsons feel extra old that they have things on Super 8.
Yeah, that's true.
Obviously, if Homer and Marge were together in the late 70s, they're not going to have a VHS recorder.
I think it was just on the surface Wonder Years parody.
But I did find it weird that he was projecting onto the fridge. Mm-hmm. The whole scene was taking place in the kitchen. I thought, like, oh, there's a reason. Like, every time he wears a red hat, there's a reason for that. Or a watch, there's a reason that's in the scene. But it was just like, This could have easily been done in their living room.
It's weird. We had a Super 8 camera too. Yeah. Okay. There's footage of me in Super Charlie Chaplinish high speed somewhere in my parents' house.
And so now Bart has to get something else. Marge suggests a potato, which I just like
think
that
they're neat.
It's another nice little non sequitur for Marge, and that's also a very O&W type joke of just like potato. Like, isn't this
Marge
boring
is
thing?
Boring enough to find joy in a potato. Yes.
And then Bart looks, thinks he'll take a geode. Mm. I looked up geodologist, obviously, is not a real word. The closest word is a lapidary.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of that.
Somebody who is good at rocks.
And geodes are kind of cool. They were brought to school a lot in my day.
I never had one. I wanted one so bad.
It felt like a thing that would be on every kid's desk. It was so easy to imagine. Lisa would definitely have a geode on her desk. And then Bart feeling his geode envy around everybody else's giant geodes, including Martin's, which is like a punch bowl.
It's huge, yeah. So Bart ends up bringing Santa's little helper to school, and he starts his show and tell with a quiz about what's under the box. And everyone thinks he's telling a joke and trying to guess the answer to it.
Boys and girls, Mrs. Krabappel, I come before you today to solve a riddle that has plagued mankind for centuries. What has four legs and ticks?
A walking clock? A walking clock!
I'd wager he has some variety of walking clock in that box.
Bart, is it a walking clock?
What? No, it's my dog.
Bart accidentally tells them a riddle. He doesn't even get it. And that Nelson constantly brings a can of tomato paste with him. I love that.
It's sodium benzoate. Yeah.
I have to say, and I'm not proud of this, but as a 13-year-old kid, I found it funny that he said to retard spoilage.
Yeah. I mean, they just sneak a dirty word in there.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he used it in the proper context.
Mm-hmm. Martin wants to show off his geode, and his showmanship really calls back to Bart gets an F when he's dressed up as Hemingway talking about the old man in the sea. Like, he has a real showmanship about him because he is gay, as they keep underlining in this episode, in these episodes.
Martin is very, well, he's very jealous that they're not going to show his geode. I loved him talking about his raisin roundies, which, again, not a real thing, though. Somebody made them online. It's they made it as vanilla cookies with a raisin cream filling.
Sounds good.
I was worried for a second that he was like, is that dog eating chocolate?
That's maybe that's why they didn't make it chocolate.
They underlined the raisin part of that.
And this is the most they've used Santa's Little Helper in a long time. But everybody's loving him and not listening to Martin.
I knew the dog before he came to class. Kaboom! That, the sound of the thunderous volcanic explosion, which gives birth to the magnificent geode. One of nature's most...
You're doing it wrong. You gotta pin him hard so he can feel it.
Look, look, let the doggy sneeze.
Ha! It thinks it's people.
Hey, Poochie. Hey, Poochie, Poochie, Poochie.
That's just his reaction.
My geode must be acknowledged.
Oh, brother. All right, back to show and tell.
Bart, why don't you put the doggy away?
Aww. It's very low-key observational humor about how people just act like complete jackasses around cute animals.
Well, a dog! Yeah. I've never seen this before. They all just lose it, and, I mean, we've done that in real life, meeting Mikkel and Diana's doggy in this very room.
Little Steve.
And I love Little Steve.
He won our hearts over.
And also that Edna just drops all of her meanness and uncaring. She's like, the dog has lit up her heart, and that she even tells Bart, good job. Mm. Like, she can't imagine the words she's saying.
Also, it just shows, like, the drudgery of school that this just bringing a simple thing like a dog into this environment can brighten everyone's day. Mm. Just like, wow, this never happens in school.
Just the way Willie is just like, look at me. Yeah. And then just the dog, one glance, he's like, ah! Like, it's made his day. It's so beautiful.
That is unironically how I am all the time. I don't see dogs living in the goddamn city, man. I love dogs.
Though I do wonder, why do those kids not know a Bart brought a dog? Like, when SLH stands up from the box, it's like, how they not ask him what's in the box the rest of this time?
We don't see that part of it. So, Lunch Lady Doris is cooking assorted horse parts.
Yes.
And we get that great opening, more testicles means more iron.
So I did look this up. According to Google, animal testicles only have 6% of your daily iron intake, which I don't know if that's like really good or not. I eat fiber bars that talk about how high fiber they are. They're like, we got 6% of your fiber.
But we do know iron helps us play.
Mm-hmm. That is true. So
you're going to tie that into testicles for the rest of my life. Thank you for that association.
And now comes a joke that I identify as when Ralph turned a corner into truly monkey cheese dumb. Like, he'd been doing the I'm eating paste, this is a drawing of a spirochete, and he's definitely not smart in the Choo Choo Choose Me episode, but this is him, like, this is a boy with problems.
Miss Hoover, there's a dog in the vent.
Ralph, remember the time you said Snagglepuss was outside?
He was going to the bathroom.
Snagglepuss was pissing or shitting outside the window.
And number one and two, even.
And that, like, the way Ralph reads it is great. That it's like, Ralph's not making this up. He definitely saw this, and it troubled him. And so it's like, boy, Ralph has problems. Like,
he really does.
They kind of have lightened up on the Ralph stuff, though. That joke is from the same cloth as he tells me to burn things.
That's right, Seeing things, hearing things. Mm. So Skinner's introduced, and I kind of just picked up on it with this viewing. They're trying to establish him as being frazzled. This is a bad day for him. Mm-hmm. And there's actually a cut scene that goes into more of his problems, actually. And I talked with this with Henry before. Like, we're going to do an episode for Patreon that's just going to be us talking about all the cutscenes and playing all the clips because they're all on the DVD.
Oh, yeah.
So in this scene, Skinner's on the phone talking about he didn't know Yom Kippur was real. Yom Kippur. It sounds made up. And then he goes on in the cut part. He goes on to say, he's like, you know the programs these kids are watching with the Beavis and the Butthead. No, sir. I'm not calling you Butthead. So, and
oh, that's cute. I forgot that joke.
I mean, that was not actually aired. It's on the cut scenes. I think we also see that Skinner's hair might be real because his head's all sweaty. He's like running his hands through his hair. If you're wearing a rug, I don't think it will permeate the entire toupee.
Yeah, they've definitely dropped the toupee thing, I'd say.
A young Jewish boy was also a Weinstein.
It's like one of the writers. When I was 11, I also didn't know what Yom Kippur was. Like, that was just noises to me. I don't know about you guys, but I grew up in a suburban South, and if there were Jewish people there, they in my realm
kept
of people,
quiet.
They kept it themselves. I don't know why.
Suburban but, North here and same.
Yeah, but so, I don't know, Dave, you grew up in New York, Long Island.
Yeah, which, so, I mean, we would just have all of the both
the
Christian
holidays.
And Jewish holidays, all the holidays that there are on the calendar. So I knew of Yom Kippur and Rosh Hashanah. I didn't know what they were. I'm just trying to look it up now. So that takes place during, like, the fall, Yom Kippur. It doesn't take place within the actual time of the year the Simpsons take place. So a little weird there, but
fall is during school time, so it's possible. But him ignoring Yom Kippur means that it's that he'll be sued. Like, these cost the school millions of dollars for that, I think.
It's a big problem. And I think Willie comes in to tell him about the dog in the vents, right?
And when he tells the rest of the school about the dog in the vents, which was the absolute wrong thing to do because it excited everybody. But Bart's one of the kids who gets excited. Like, no, Bart should react differently to this. This could have been any kid in this shot. It did not even
I think Bart just wants the chaos. He Yeah. He thinks a dog will be fine. But there's a great line from Willie. Have you gone waxy in your beaster? I could not. I mean, beaster obviously signifies head, but I couldn't find any like Scottish slang. I think they just made it up.
There's a lot of good Scottish slang in this.
Yeah, yeah, they make up a lot. And that he's
a guff talking work slacker too.
Yeah, it was. I don't even love that long series of jokes of Willie insulting Skinner and that it constantly keeps happening, but I at least like that they heightened it and made it special in this one of like, finally Skinner has a comeback to being insulted by Willie at every turn.
It's a very Hank Hill comeback.
And so then, yeah, it is decided that Willie will go into the vents, but he needs something first.
Lunch, Lady Doris. Have you got any grease?
Yes. Yes, we do.
Then grease me up, woman!
Okie dokie.
Why does that take so fucking perfect?
Body by Ned.
Well, yeah, he had already been shown in Radio Bart to have awesome body, so they just had to stick with that. And I liked, Doris's reaction of like, you can so tell good. she likes it, but she's trying to keep a straight face. Like,
yes, we do. Yeah, and actually the vents are so big, I don't think Willie needs to be greased up.
Not really.
They're huge vents.
Yeah, and also think of this with this rare Lunch Lady Doris appearance. She is a co-star on The Critic right now as she's doing it. Well, actually, by this point, The Critic is off the air and not being played on ABC anymore. Not to spoil episodes of Talking Critic for you guys on Patreon, but yes, the show didn't make it to the end of March, premiered at the end of January, and was canceled and taken off the air by the end of March.
We do get the great quote, there's nary an animal alive that can outrun a grease Scotsman. And it's shades of, I think it was Marge Gets a Job when Willie fights the wolf.
Yeah. Willie is a great fighter. The camera angle underneath Willie, like his balls basically smack the camera. Like, there was definite care taken into showing Willie's bulge in
it's
his underwear.
It's a mighty bulge.
Like,
yes.
And I read somewhere the sequence is a giant Alien parody. Mm. But somebody pointed out it is actually a parody of all three Aliens movies up until that point.
I feel like it is an amalgam of all of them.
It is.
Yeah.
And well, watching the dots really was definitely in Alien. And
Alien.
Yeah, in both of them. And so
there's apparently a real specific Alien 3 thing in there, but that's the one we don't watch all the time.
Yeah,
I haven't seen it in a long time.
That one's not burned into my brain.
They do go to like the least convenient way to get a dog out of the event, which is you could leave food up there. You could put a trap up there. Like, I recently just read some story about a cat that got lost at the airport, like jumped out during security check.
Oh no.
Hung out in the vents for a couple weeks. They finally got it out with the trap. I'm like, yeah, because you wouldn't go up in the vent.
Yeah.
It just seems dumb.
God, I never thought of that with the people who have to bring their cats to the airport. Yeah. And like, one of the things that happens every time when you take a cat to the airport is they're like, sorry, you can't just put your cat through the x-ray machine. You have to take it out of this carrier. Yeah. Like, this cat will murder me when I take it out of
I've done that with my parrot, and they're not happy when I'm like, no, we need to go to a separate room. I don't want my bird flying around the airport.
Yes,
There's one Willie line. My research failed me. So Willie catches Santa's little helper, and they end up above the auditorium, like really high up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He opens the vent, and he says, "'Tis more dizzying than the belfry at St. blah, blah, blah." I'm not going to say the word.
St. Kurga Gluwagen.
And this could be the captions failing me because the captions are not always right. Frankie Yak is sometimes wrong because it's based on the captions, but I could not find this fictional, now I know it's fictional, church.
Yeah, there is, as far as I can tell, too, there was no similar church either, and at least in Scotland. But hey, any Scotch listeners out there, if you know what he's referring to, and it's not just a made-up saint, like, if you were searching it being called St. Kurga Gluwagen, that would explain that.
That's
like,
very good, Henry.
Then there would be a Catholic saint of that name, even if there wasn't a belfry attached to it. And the fact that that wouldn't come up, then it's like, okay, then it's a made up.
We know he grew up in North Kiltown.
so we need to search the North Kiltown.
It's going to be our first field trip.
Skinner hiccuping, he's so worried, and he's
a one-time trade, never comes back.
And that Edna doesn't even care, she's smoking in the hallway, which, given the, like, this episode slightly feels like a prequel to the episode where they start dating, and so her being so mean to him in this, of just like, oh, poor Skinner, she'll love you eventually.
For some reason.
Then things, of course, get much worse.
So good.
Superintendent Chalmers, you didn't have to come all the way down here. Everything's under control.
That is not his fault.
I have had it with the school, Skinner. The low test scores. Class after class of ugly, ugly children. Oh, no, I really think the children's appearance...
Seymour, you are in very, very big trouble.
Why, looking into this lovable mutt's eyes just melts my heart. Seymour, all is forgiven.
Make way for Willie! Sid, make way for Willie, you bloated gus bug!
Seymour? You're fired!
I'm sorry. Did you just call me a liar?
No, I said you were fired.
Oh. That's much worse.
I love
one last hiccup. That's
love
much
Superintendent
worse.
Chalmers so much.
I wonder if that's ever been successful in averting being fired.
No,
are you calling me a liar?
Are you calling me a liar that would just like throw them off on firing you? Poor Skinner. You can't blame him for all of this, but
like the shitty fireman breaking the window, that's not his fault.
But the Chalmers doesn't. Well, I mean, Chalmers blames him for ugly students.
Yeah.
Too, so
class after class of ugly children.
I also did love the little joke of Wiggum complimenting the basketball play of the two cops. Like, that's working out more. And the acting of Dan when he's both laughing as Willie and being smashed with books. Like, it's really good.
Oh, yeah, and the kids are throwing books at the vent.
And Make Way for Willie, that is a great line.
If that should be the name of his spinoff, if not.
The Simpsons will be right back.
Hey, this is Hank Azaria. You're listening to Talking Simpsons on Laser Time. I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah, Bart's feeling pretty bad about it. It's they're eating a classic Simpsons breakfast of glop.
Just like a bunch of piles.
Just the same piles of glop. And this is a long one, but it is... I split this into two parts because this entire scene is just the greatest, but...
A lot of great debuts in this episode.
There's three major debuts here, and this is the first.
Boys and girls, because of Mr. Skinner's sudden departure, I've had to appoint a new principal. Leopold.
All right, you little punks. Prick up your freaking ears, because I'm only going to be saying this once. From now on, things are going to be very... very different around here. With your new principal, Ned Flanders.
Yay! Okay, Leopold appears one more time with the same joke.
Or the same joke.
This is one substitute teacher you're not going to screw with. Marge Simpson.
It's both on a stage talking about the PTA, and but I love what Leopold represents, that he is a divergent way this episode could have gone. It easily could have been about the strict taskmaster who ruins the school and makes everything worse and shows you how nice Skinner was.
Who is
but
Leopold?
That's too cliche.
Who is Leopold and why does he need to be there?
Yeah.
It's like Leopold will tell you. And he's like, they're up there for 10 seconds.
He's just like Chalmers' buddy or
he's
something.
Like Chalmers' Sean Spicer. Send him out to deliver bad news.
And he's so mean. It just
he has a scar. I love Leopold.
And all the gasps from the children, too.
But he seems happy at the very end of an announcement.
I like how he doesn't open his mouth when he speaks.
Yes,
he talks through credit.
Talks like Charlton Heston.
I'm going to screw with. And then the scene continues with Flanders being a big friend to all the kids, and the kids love him.
Well, tippity top of the AM to every good buddy here. As chairman of the PTA, I am diddly delighted to take over, and I think I can put the pal back in principal.
Yeah. And I'll put the super back in superintendent. That's the same exact joke.
Now, I know everybody's eager to get back to class. But I thought it might break the ice if we had a little Q&A.
Dude, ask a question or we'll have to go back to class.
Yeah, you.
I was wondering, do you, what's your policy on, lunch?
Well, let me just say I want to put the stew back in students.
It's just a damn popularity contest with you kids.
Poor Chalmers.
Kids wouldn't be happy to know they're going to be getting stew all the time.
Yeah, it's the damn popularity contest. You can't stand it.
Yeah, but I remember liking people like Flanders for making jokes that I could get, and especially in elementary school.
And that was a very school joke where it's like, this assembly, we need to, like, prolong, like, assembly or not getting homework in class. Oh, let's just, delay the teacher with some dumb question.
And the Jimbo's nervous acting was it's the most, like, range Jimbo's been asked to play at this point. Though he also was so good against James Woods.
Why me?
Yeah. And that Leopold, I find it nice that Leopold is comforting Chalmers in his sadness. Aww. And so I definitely had that moment as a kid of, like, seeing a teacher out, not in school, and just like, what is this? Who are you? You've gone crazy, as Milhouse would say. And, all right, look, do you guys have a better line of the episode than this
is
next
it.
One?
This all is right.
That's the joke. Now I finally have time to do what I've always wanted, write the great American novel. Mine is about a futuristic amusement park where dinosaurs are brought to life through advanced cloning techniques. I call it Billy and the Clonosaurus.
Oh, you have got to be kidding, sir. First you think of an idea that has already been done, and then you give it a title that nobody could possibly like. Didn't you think this
was... bestseller list for 18 months! Every magazine cover had it!
Popular movies of all time, sir! What were you thinking? I mean, thank you. I'll come again.
Billy and the Clonosaurus.
The greatest joke.
That's one of my favorite lines ever. Yeah, it really is. And the rant with the cross dissolves is a joke. I feel like I don't see enough in The Simpsons or anywhere else.
Yeah, I mean, and Apu took it upon himself to lecture this man, like, how dare... In the animation, what were you thinking? It's like how he, like, his head moves like a bird almost. He's so mad.
And that Skinner is just broken by it. He doesn't defend his idea at all. He's just like... And that they could do that entire joke without saying the words Jurassic Park. Like, you know it's about Jurassic Park. Everyone knows it.
It's
because
still a phenomenon.
But that he doesn't say it.
It almost seems like The Simpsons is refusing to acknowledge the biggest thing in the universe that isn't it.
To specifically date it like that.
Stampy did a Jurassic Park joke, too.
Yeah, but they rarely will say, they wouldn't say Jurassic Park, the movie we all saw last year, remember? Like,
there's literally a line for people to go see Batman in The Simpsons, but
that's
not Jurassic Park.
But man, the Billy and the Clonosaurus.
Billy and the Clonosaurus.
So Bill Oakley and Josh Weinstein, they based Skinner on a lot of their teachers they had in high school. If you didn't know, Bill Oakley and Josh Weinstein met each other in high school and stayed together for like almost 30 years, I think, maybe 25 as writing partners,
but they're still
friendly.
Buddy,
I saw a lot of my teachers in Skinner as well. Like in high school, I had a very Skinner-esque teacher. Teacher who we all knew lived with his parents, his elderly parents. He was in his 50s, and he dressed very plainly, and he was a stick in the mud. But we would make fun of him cruelly behind his back for being
a
loser.
Children, and I definitely had teachers like that too. I also, well, speaking of lameness, I like that Flanders has Slicer Yoo-Hoo, which is such a specific thing that he's like
Yoo-Hoo's disgusting. By the way,
when I watch this episode like as a 13-year-old, I'm like, wow, that is actually the best drinks to have, because like chocolate milk, it's not.
Chocolate milk. It somehow
water.
Has diarrhea-inducing components to it.
I just love Yoo-Hoo, so I was like, this is actually better than regular soda. Better than what Skinner has to offer later, too.
I was more of a quick guy than that, because that rabbit, he told me to get.
And there's also milk alongside of it, so it's not just like a weird like, chocolate syrup and water disgusting.
I'm with you, Andrew. Banana-flavored quick.
And also,
the best.
It couldn't be Yoo-Hoo if he's clinking a glass with ice in it. You don't put ice in Yoo-Hoo. That's weird.
I've seen it happen, and it's gross. It's already
it's
watery
even more
enough.
Disgusting. Yeah. At least with Quick too, when you I guess you can buy pre-made Quick, but when you make it yourself, you control the density of chocolate in there. And
I've never forgiven Yoo-Hoo. I went to the Warped Tour 1997 where it was co-headlined by Blink-182 and Eminem in a parking lot in Atlanta, and they had like no water fountains. But Yoo-Hoo was there with all the promotional Yoo-Hoo you could drink. We all almost shit our pants.
Oh, my God.
Hot, warm Yoo-Hoo on a summer day in a blacktop parking lot in Atlanta.
Ooh,
so we have a scene next of more of Skinner's life outside of the school. And
if Billy and the Clonosaurus was right before, this would be this would be my line of the show this sequence.
I do want to say, it's not just a Skinner thing. It's also like what you do when you're unemployed. You indulge in these basic things to make them feel more significant. Yeah. Just like, what adventure am I doing today when I do the dishes? Like, which salad dressing do I want to buy? So I have all this time.
How can I make laundry more exciting?
Yeah.
They'd actually do, on Mission Hill, they do a better, even better observation. A whole episode episode about observing unemployment when Andy loses his job.
I did not appreciate that episode until I was unemployed, and I was like, oh my god, it is so perfect.
And then when you have a dental problem, you're like, okay, I need a job with insurance now.
Time
like,
to scam somebody into medical help.
Let's see. Tide. Cheer. Bold. Biz. Fab. All. Gain. Whisk. I believe today I will try bold.
Come on, Skinner, you're losing money. Just buy a big jug of it.
Yeah. So, we'll get to it in a second, but like, it's no wonder that he can't afford new underwear when he's buying it at the laundromat and he's buying groceries at the Quickie Mart. Like,
it is a huge markup in both those places. Yeah, I
just try to check. All these miraculously still exist.
Wow,
for the most part.
Of them.
Yeah. Let me double check Biz.
Biz seemed out of place there.
Biz, yeah.
But I like that observation of just every detergent is a one syllable word.
That's true, yeah.
When you hear them all together, you're like, oh, they all are named the same.
Yeah, they all seem like the end of a URL.
Yeah. Dot bold.
And Biz is still around. What the hell?
Oh, man. The detergent market is stable. I like Bart's awkwardness at meeting the guy he fired again. Mm. He just keeps running into him, just like, oh, hey. And meanwhile, Skinner is so desperate for contact with anybody that he'll ask Bart to come over to his place. I didn't know you could light bags of poop on fire and make people step on them. So that joke made no sense to me. I didn't know that prank because I was a good boy. I was
These
not
Italian loafers will make short work
think
of this.
Another, I think a kid, like a young adult book, had to contextualize what was actually in the bag because they don't say it in the show.
Like, a year or two later, we would learn from Billy Madison.
Yeah.
He
called the shit poop.
He called the shit poop. Poop. fuck it. But this is another one of those things that I say every day. Blank will make short work of it. Ever seen a game stream? I constantly say that.
I like making that pronouncement. Like that will make short work of this.
But it's also one of the things I've read a ton of books and seen a billion movies. I've never heard that from anybody but Seymour Skinner. Make short work of it.
And this is how desperate Skinner really is now.
I'm kind of busy on Saturday.
Hey!
We got Skinner's underpants!
There's nothing you could do about it, Mr. X-Principal!
That's not true. I can buy a new pair! No, I can't.
Man.
I needed those. I really did.
No severance?
Yeah.
Come on.
And
it's fired.
He was making principal money without paying rent.
How much authority a principal has during the summer.
That's true. Though also, Seymour has been paying his mother all this money, like for all the food he ate as a child, for example.
Oh, right.
That's probably why he has no money.
Let's explain later.
She's also telling him when it's 7:30. She's
That's
doing
true.
Some important things for him.
Well, yeah, Agnes is a lot nicer in this than this is the first time we've seen Agnes since Crepes of Wrath.
Oh, no, she was in Bartender Child.
Oh, all right.
When he stabs the mother effigy on stage.
That's right. Yeah. She doesn't say anything
when she
is there. You're right. Okay, so this is the second appearance since then. Yeah.
So Skinner invites Bart out to dinner at this great restaurant. He sells it to Bart by saying, they'll make a pizza pie with a topping of your choice.
Well, I did like just the lameness of Skinner in his room alone directing the orchestra off of tape and and wanting to know when it's 7:30, which is such a lame thing. Like, was that even...
That, to me, was like my sister telling me, like, dinosaurs is starting.
It's a very little kid thing. Like, I'll tell you when your favorite show is on. And actually, it's a cute Skinner thing where he's conducting and Bart enters and he's not even like ashamed or anything.
Ashamed.
Just like, this is just what I do.
Yeah,
like,
they're just having fun. Hey, friend.
Also, I think Daryl on Kids in the Hall did that. Like a sketch open with him like conducting.
Daryl. And Daryl is the worst. then Skinner goes over his history in the Army. And I wanted to go back to it because he mentions Joey Heatherton. So he says
who the fuck is Joey Heatherton?
So that he had gotten shot twice there. He had two Purple Hearts on the thing. I don't know if you noticed next to the photograph.
Right, yeah.
And one of them was for being shot in front of his men. He's like, this is right before I get shot in the back. Which is funny because it's a USO show. So we wanted Joey Heatherton to put on some pants. And so Joey Heatherton was a sexy, very sexy 60s and 70s.
It's a woman.
Singer, model, actress.
Reference who, later, I think, I don't know the context, but if Mo could have one wish, he'd say, a date with Joey Heatherton.
Oh, yes, yeah. He's into her, too. Well, who wouldn't be
but
like...
He as a kid, I did not think like, oh, I thought this was just some crazy army guy who took off his pants a lot.
And do a quick search for Joey Heatherton. You
along with a lot of other babes, she performed at USO shows. And
she did quite a lot of USO shows with Bob Hope during Vietnam.
And based on the Gilbert Gottfried podcast, which we reference a lot on here, I know for a fact now that if you see a woman on stage with Bob Hope at a USO show, he probably fucked her with his withered penis.
Yes, yeah.
He was a disgusting man. And,
you know, wow, she has so many better options there in terms of like physical specimens.
Oh, man meat.
But so here's Joey Heatherton singing with Bob Hope in front of our troops.
Without pants.
It's a lovely day for saying. It's a lovely, such a lovely.
It's a lovely day.
That's entertainment back then.
I mean, I get why they did it, but I don't understand the appeal. Do you want to go to the USO show and see a woman from 2,000 yards away?
I hear she's half naked. I don't get it. If you've looked into more like Bob Hope was kind of willing to throw away a TV and movie career to go entertain troops to where it became like an obsession and it interfered with a lot of his personal life.
It was a charity, but also an excuse to fuck around on his wife.
Yeah,
that was the secret thing. That's one of my favorite jokes in Arrested Development when they reveal that Lucille Bluth had been a Joey Heatherton type going on tour with Bob Hope. And it would be what the Lucille would have done. She would have been a showgirl who then married a rich guy. That was her character. And so
She's
kind of a shut-in, apparently.
Mm. Oh, I didn't know that. Well, I'm sorry I skipped ahead to the Italian restaurant because I missed one thing. It reminded me as a kid of being at someone's house and being offered a food item that was just weird or something I would never drink on my own. So, like, a diet caffeine-free Dr. Pepper or an individual fruit cocktail cup. Very lame, skinnery things.
And again, to me, like, Ned stuff is way cooler.
Yeah.
Chocolate milk or orange soda.
I'd rather have nachos Flanders style than any of those.
Two of my best friends were Indian and Pakistani, and that's all it was all the time. Like, weird food, weird drinks.
Well, speaking of drinks, one of my favorite lines in this episode is, did anybody ask about me? I thought someone said your name, but they were saying skim milk. Which, I used to work at a GameStop, and I had a coworker named Patrick Salazar. Mm-hmm. And he left, and then he just visited the store one day, and I kept hoping he would ask me, has anyone been asking about me? Because I always had in my head, no, I think someone was, but they were just saying salad bar.
But he never said you up for
No, him. It was just that one time he came, I'm like, please just ask. Please
You're
just
saving
ask.
It to use it here. Yeah. Perfect.
On your last day, you should have invited him into the store. Just say it. Please just say it. I need disclosure.
I mean, I actually have been that Skinner many times of like fishing for information of like talking about me. Like, I just did it with the bad place I just left. I've definitely asked like so because what I want to hear is they all are failing without you and no one can do anything without you and you're the greatest, most important person in the world. they haven't said that to me yet though.
Waiting for that email.
They were just asking about Dilbert.
All right, but yes, then they go and get that pizza pie from another premiering character.
I thought you might like this restaurant, Bart. They'll make a pizza pie with a topping of your choice.
Simone, you want your usual table?
No, Luigi. I'd like one with two seats. I'll be dining with a friend tonight.
Hey, good for you, huh?
It's real nice here.
Salvatore, guess who's here? Mr. Cucolabanza and some real ugly kid.
I had to look that up, that spelling, a really, really long time ago.
Cucolabanza?
I think it might be a reference to a really old character from an old movie. I forgot. I did this because
I know what it really means. What? It's Italian slang that means crazy in the head.
I never looked it up until this time, too. It was like, Cucolabanza.
And Luigi will appear once more to make the same joke in Bart the Fink, but he's also used after that. But he is reused like Leopold for that same joke.
And please, if I may, this is my stereotype. I got to point to the reference material. That would be none other than Tony from the 1955 movie Lady and the Tramp.
Okay. Hey, Joe. Pucci, he says he wants two spaghetti speciale heavy on a meatball.
Tony, dogs don't talk.
He's a talker to me.
Okay, he's a talker to me.
I love this. Love
one really ugly dog.
I never read that as a...
No, it's a very deliberate Lady Tramp reference.
I can see it now.
Well, they also admit, the animators, that his design is taken off the pizza box of, like, he is the pizza box guy of, like, enjoy this pizza. Like,
he's the generic pizza box guy for every non-chain in this area.
Yeah, actually, we just saw the pizza box guy in the second episode of Talking Critic when we did that miserable...
Exactly.
Yes, I'll acknowledge that I don't have to deal with a lot of stereotypes. I was a Southern kid with an Italian last name. The only time I had to whip it out when they was like, are you Jewish? Nah, Italian. Mm. Okay, we're cool. but... this is the only stereotype my friends had to be like, oh shit, you're that guy?
You're
like,
the pizza
I guess
box.
I was always real excited to see Luigi. I love seeing Luigi.
He just transformed into easy Italian stereotype jokes that they would do, or jokes about people having Italian stereotypes. I did like the grease ball coming through. And like, oh, kids, I'm making the nice pizza for you.
That's in
That was my Mario.
Yeah. Same voice. At some point, Bart is like upset at the state of the school is in. He is. Mm-hmm. This should be his dream. Like, Milhouse is rubbing ketchup onto his stomach. Martin is in a cage.
Yes. I love the line, not only am I not learning, I'm forgetting stuff I used to know.
That's great. I love that.
It's not fun to challenge a system where you can get away with everything. He wants a Skinner to push back against instead. And meanwhile, Skinner is just heartbroken that he can't go back. He realizes he can't live a life there with the memory of the school right in front of him. I got carsick in your office. That was also funny.
Was that Ralph?
Yes.
Okay,
yeah.
I thought so.
So then we get some army jokes, which in a pre-Iraq war, pre-9/11 thing, these jokes are so different.
I mean, but the point of this joke is, like, isn't the army so useless now? Mm-hmm. They're not doing anything of importance, and everyone in the army is kind of stupid.
And that the guy points out, like, it's rare to have combat veterans there.
Yeah.
And it's like, they're just securing a Montgomery Wards or something, when meanwhile, like... We've got all the combat veterans we need right now.
We'll throw you into any meat grinder.
But yes, he's back in the Army.
It's good to have another combat veteran around here. I myself received a number of medals for securing that Montgomery Ward in Kuwait City.
Yes, Colonel. Now, I understand it'll be my duty to mold the new recruits into a well-disciplined, highly trained infantry unit.
Sure, I guess. Here to come.
My favorite character.
Hey, where do I get my grenades at?
They don't have them group toilets here no more, do they?
It's like a stupider Cletus. It's Hank's area. They're group toilets here no more.
I mean, that voice is pretty close to Cousin Merle.
Yeah.
Like, each going to him.
Yeah, but that, the colonel, was his first name Corey? He sounded almost exactly like someone Lisa would call.
Group toilets.
Group toilets.
I don't know what the basis of that fear of a group turlet would be, but...
I mean, I don't like peeing in a trough.
Man. Oh, no, this trough... I just started watching F is for Family, and the third episode, there's a joke where the 10-year-old son has to go to a public toilet without his dad in the 70s, and it's all disgusting trough-style urinals. And,
not good.
And disgusting
over
old,
cigarette butts.
Yes, and guys with just all their disgusting balls out. And, so I think of those trough urinals, like, I think I've maybe seen, like, three of them ever in my life.
Oh, every sports stadium.
Sports stadiums in
and
three.
And
the crappy bars.
Well, I also try to never use public restrooms.
That's true.
It works with that, but he's...
Henry grinds up his pee and converts it to farts. He'll show you how next episode.
I'm really good at holding it in. I'm lucky to have a big
Sounds
water,
really but, unhealthy.
But one of the things that Skinner does while training the troops is that he teaches them how to do better marching chants. And I thought the one that they said, I don't know, but I've been told the Parthenon is mighty old.
Yeah.
I'm looking that up, and it's not referenced anywhere on the internet besides The Simpsons.
Because... Yeah, because that's it came
we
from there.
Yeah,
I thought it was a regular military chant.
No, they're parodying a scene in Full Metal Jacket that is filthy.
The joke is Skinner is like, I want to turn this filthy chant into something educational.
Because it was about Eskimo pussy.
Mighty cold. Eskimo pussy's mighty cold. They have the camera even at the very specific Kubrick centering angle.
Except that, just make sure to stop at the very end and watch, like, Skinner's pupil has gone to, like, the back of his head.
Yeah, they're, like, totally wall-eyeing him.
They're doing their best to imitate some of the best cinematography of all time.
They got a TV budget.
But how old is the Parthenon? I just looked that up. It was built in 438 BC. So
nobody knows.
That would make it 2,455 years old.
Officially mighty old.
Yes.
Meanwhile, they're trying to talk... Marge and Homer are trying to talk some sense into Ned as we get another shocking reveal.
Ned, Homer and I are a little concerned with the way the school's being run.
Yes.
Easily concerned.
I may go a little bit easy on the old hickory dickory stick, but that's just because my dad was so hard on me when I was a boy. Whoopsie doodle.
Oh, man! Nick's spilled ink all over my poems. He's a real flat tire. I mean a cube, man. He's putting us on the train to Squaresville, Mona.
That ridiculous joke would be canon.
Yes.
That's amazing.
Damn, beatniks.
The beatnik stuff was great. Because, of course, you would think he had strict religious parents, and that's why he is the way he is.
Yeah, but
his
had,
parents were like hippies, but more educated.
He's rebelling from that. But it's funny that Ned's mom, who we never meet after this, and his dad, who we never meet after this, well, his mom is named Mona, the same name as Homer's mom.
Oh,
and they're both sort of like counterculture types. Mm. I mean,
they're going to have a Batman versus Superman moment at some point in the finale.
Shit. You're
they're
right.
Like
Well, I was going to wonder if there was like a Reddit thread. Are they the same woman?
We're going to write a bad article about this. It'll make millions. Yes. But I don't know why the name Mona was chosen for both of them. Mm. I don't know if there's a famous Mona beatnik or hippie or counterculture
sounds
person.
Beatnik-y, I'd say. Yeah. Well, also that it is reused in Hurricane Nettie, and that's how you find out about them trying nothing and being all out of ideas. What I didn't like, I actually really like the Viva Ned Flanders episode, but they reveal that he's 60. And until the 2000s, then his age wouldn't match up with having parents.
Yeah.
So that's what I didn't like. It was moments like that even in good episodes and later Simpsons that made me sour on the show as a grumpy puss because it was like, no, that invalidates continuity that was in previous episodes.
There are great jokes in it, though.
Viva Ned Flanders
is
really
funny. I'll take a white wine spritzer.
No waffle bar. I'm so sorry. You never know what two women could do for you. But also, the secret running gag of season 5, I realized with this scene, is watching someone fantasize. They do a cutaway, which they always did in season 4, but this time it was a pronounced thing in Merkin's thing of like people watching the person think about the thing they're cutting away to and being confused. Hmm. Marge does that while Flanders is cutting back. Like, she even looks at Homer and goes,
there's a moment of at least awkward recognition of what's happening.
And just previously in Burns is Air, Marge is fantasizing about Lee Majors.
Right.
Everyone's staring at her. In Bart Gets an Elephant, everybody is just staring at her after she mentions the double-blind windows. It's a lot of staring and just taking time to stare. I like that they could have jokes like that, too. Mm. They could just take the time, like, well, wait 2 seconds to...
Yeah, it's confidence I don't have to let a joke breathe.
Keep going.
And up next, Lisa sort of figures out why Bart needs Skinner in his life, and we're introduced to a very important character in The Simpsons.
Wow, I never thought Principal Skinner could become any more of a square, but there's the proof.
It's weird, Lise. I miss him as a friend, but I miss him even more as an enemy.
I think you need Skinner, Bart. Everybody needs a nemesis. Sherlock Holmes had his Dr. Moriarty. Mountain Dew has its Mellow Yellow. Even Maggie has that baby with the one eyebrow.
I just like that.
Gerald. Baby Gerald.
Baby Gerald.
The baby with the one eye. It was that another debut that would become canon.
Mm-hmm. Well, reused. Baby Gerald would come back so much that he would be in the HD-ified opening of the show.
Oh, yeah. Right, yeah.
When after Maggie is scanned.
I hate that opening.
They then, they pack it with every joke they couldn't do in season 2. So when they made the last opening. So, you know, I get it. They wanted to fill with jokes, but.
They could have made it look better.
And the baby Gerald was named in season 8's The Canine Mutiny, which is when he started a fire that then Laddie saves everybody from, and then after Quimby gives the award to Laddie as thanks, he then says, baby Gerald. Like that's when Gerald got his name, and I respect that because that was an Oakley and Weinstein season episode, so I respect them giving a name to the character they created in this. And Baby Gerald would next be seen in Lady Bouvier's Lover.
You're right.
It was definitely Oakley and Weinstein going like, well, we wrote this one. Yeah. Let's do that joke again. We can make it a runner just because we're writing 5 episodes.
That's right. Their episodes are pretty close together in this season.
And when Bart goes onto the range, like, he should know better than that. He's not that stupid, is he? And
if he wanted to see explosions, also proud home of secret civilian mail opening projects.
That's great. They're proud of it. And this was the most Merkin-y moment of the Quickie Mart is blown up, and seemingly Apu and Sanjay are dead.
Like, really great touch, the K landing behind in the next scene.
Denying you the true explosion, but dropping the K of just like, yeah, they're dead.
And they wicked pumps again in scenes from the class struggle in Springfield when Marge gets the dress, and she's helping her friend pump the gas because she's too rich and stupid to do it.
Bart sees how much he is suffering, and he wants to help him. And I like that early on, Skinner identifies that obviously the army is too rowdy for him. The army was never the place for him because it was filled with guys who want to have fun, not boring people like him.
It does seem a little incongruous that, like, he whips him into shape before with the Parthenon march thing, and then now they hate him?
Well, he can make him march differently, but it doesn't mean they obviously would all hate him.
I think they're just putting up with him, and now they're just like, fuck Skinner.
And I like he establishes that if he comes back, Bart has to be a good student or they won't be friends anymore, just to make it easier to get into the kind of sweet ending they have there. But then, though, Bart finally has a plan to save Skinner.
What's he doing here?
Well, once he found out we were going to get Ned Flanders fired, he insisted on helping.
That is true.
Here's the plan. Once Chalmers comes for his next inspection and sees how crappy the school has gotten, he'll fire Ned on the spot.
One question remains. How do I get out of the army?
No problemo. Just make a pass at your commanding officer.
Done and done. And I mean done.
What's going on in there?
Nothing.
Done and done.
I must know more about that joke.
That felt like usual
still
Simpsons.
Is he still homosexual?
Well, that feels like definitely a Simpsons tradition of having a one-off joke that would imply someone is gay, or just that. Like,
I think he was just overly willing to do it. He had no shame just because he wanted to get out that badly.
I mean, I'm cool with the reading if they want.
You don't think it implies he already did it?
I think it just means consider it done. I don't think it means like it's already been done.
And it's so easy for him to imagine it. He has absolutely no.
He's got a voice like Corey. So,
and I guess we should say this is the "Don't Ask, Don't Tell" zone of the army.
It's a dated joke. You can't be fired for being gay in the army now.
What a fucking weird time.
God, I hate this planet.
I know.
God.
These wussified army people. That was something else in the, I believe
Gays
it was
the army going up to do things I refuse to.
I believe it was the 2012 election where they had at some Republican debate they took in video questions, and one was from an openly gay service member who was asking what he'd do for them, and the Republican voting audience at this event, they booed a soldier because he was talking about being gay.
Christ.
That sucks.
But I wouldn't mind if they'd made the reading now that, like, you know what, Skinner is bi. Like, he's always been bi, or he's pansexual, or whatever, that he just, it wouldn't invalidate all his relationships with women, but it's just like, Skinner goes both ways.
You're saying he's gay until he had his first female encounter, Henry. That's unbelievable.
So, I mean, he was into Patty first. Like, it wasn't just Edna.
One thing you should notice about this episode is that there's very, very little Homer.
Oh, yeah.
There's almost no Homer in this episode.
That's why I love it when he shows up like that. Like, this is true.
If you watch the cuts scenes from this episode, there's a few more Homer things in Act 3. The scene with them in the bedroom is extended. Homer's plan is to make Ned think the school is turned upside down by gluing all the furniture to the ceiling. And then he's like, we'll have to teach all the children to walk upside down, but that's not a problem. And I'll get to the second part, which I'm glad they went with the ending they went with, because the true first ending features Homer in a huge way, and it really undercuts the sweet ending of this episode.
And this was an episode that I ended up taping the syndication version and not the one it aired the first time, and I think they cut out the whole part where he tries to take the dog to work. So there's even less of that in the syndicated version.
In fact, David, such an intentional scene, I totally forgot it existed.
That
was
here.
A good cut.
And when I saw it, because I'm more familiar with the syndicated version, I'm like, oh, he's shaking the dog. The dog's going to bite him or something.
Oh, right.
As the end
and
of the joke.
Just
but it's
nothing.
Just like, okay, I'll take the baby.
And did love that spider biting the back of Bart's head, too, just to backtrack a little bit. But here's another, again, if it wasn't for Billy and the Clonosaurus. Toboggan ride would be my favorite line.
Before
of the
we
show.
Start, I went to Catholic school, and this line delighted me.
Come on, Chalmers. You fired Skinner for less than this.
Yeah, I did, but Skinner really bugged me. Besides, the way America's public schools are sliding, they'll all be this way in a few months. I say lay back and enjoy it. It's a hell of a toboggan ride.
Well, cockily doodly do, little buddies. Let's thank the Lord for another beautiful school day.
Thank the Lord. Thank the Lord? That sounded like a prayer. A prayer? A prayer in a public school! God has no place within these walls, just like backs have no place within organized religion! Simpson, you get your wish.
Flanders is history.
That joke has a lot to offend everybody.
It's so great. And some of these cutscenes are so buried on the DVD, you actually have to go to the art and animation to watch the animatic of Act 3. So some of these cutscenes didn't make it to color animation. One of them is of Bart walking Chalmers through the hallway, showing him all the destruction. And there's a naked child drawing himself off with the American flag. And Bart's like, look at this. Isn't this terrible? He's like, I'm glad to see that student exercising his First Amendment right to desecrate the flag. So that could have been one of these lines. But also, that line, just as facts have no place with an organized religion, that wasn't part of the original animatic. They added that to like sort of like give it another punch. I like it.
I don't know. Otherwise, it makes Chalmers seem too staunch and anti-religious. Or wait, no.
I mean,
no,
that makes
around.
Him more.
No,
more.
I like
that.
Yeah.
No, just that I wanted. I'm watching this again because I remember the ending, not the beginning, and that Skinner doesn't recognize Yom Kippur.
Right.
So
right.
Does that in Chalmers' eyes make him better for being so
agnostic?
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe so.
His Bible is the book.
Yes, it's a nice creation that Chalmers is so anti-church and state mixing. And he's like, no, nothing related to God in here.
I mean, Ned is enforcing the children to pray, but it might cross a line to say, let's thank the Lord, you know?
Yeah, though, I mean, I was at schools that were more about graying that line. I didn't go to Catholic school like you, Bob. But my science teacher in middle school, I was around so many students who were just like, she hates Christians because she teaches evolution. And it was really just, I realize now, it was the parents of the students mad that she taught evolution, telling their kids to hate her. And it was just like, she was a skinny old lady. Like, who cared? But she taught evolution, which is the thing to teach in school. And this was like in 1998 or 97.
That's not what Ben Stein told me. He's on TV a bunch.
No but, facts allowed.
Yes, I like how strongly Chalmers says that.
And the shocking music and the camera zoom.
So
a prayer.
So
a prayer in a public school.
I've used that hell of a toboggan ride line several times since the election. I just
and,
been like, yeah, it's
actually
over.
At our old job, I would send you that gift frequently.
Yep, yeah, yeah.
I say lay back and enjoy it.
But we couldn't lay back and enjoy it anymore, could we, Bob? But
that's why we're here. And thank you so much for supporting us.
Yes. Oh, I meant to mention right before that scene, Martin is in his cage. Yes. They've caged Martin, and he is singing the Toreador song from Carmen. And
that was in Bart the Genius.
That's the connection.
Wow,
in the very
Henry.
Next episode of Bart the Genius that would air that night, not the next episode chronologically, they go to see Carmen.
Yeah,
so
in a very long scene.
Yes. God, there's so many long scenes in that. And now that we've done this, I wouldn't mind the idea of, like, in season 10, we go back and do a new Talking Simpsons for a first season episode and
the
then be
4K
like,
version.
Holy shit, look at this.
Yeah, like, it's got to be shocking after all this.
Looks like Skinner gets his job back, and I just love Chalmers' qualifications for him.
Well, I really enjoyed my time here, Superintendent. May the Lord bless and keep you.
Yeah, take it outside, God boy.
Oakley dokley.
Dirksen tuck in your shirt. Jaffe, spit out that gum.
You really think it's a good idea to give that freak his job back?
Oh, he seems to know the students' names.
That's just it.
So we get a very sweet scene of Skinner and Bart have to, you know, come to terms and be like, we can't be friends anymore. This has to end now. And they both put very cute signs on each other's backs. One is teach me and one is kick me. And the original ending, which I'm glad they cut, it's only in animatic form. You have to go to that special feature. That scene is interrupted, the pinning of the notes. Homer crashes through the wall, riding some sort of device. I can't tell because it's so clouded by all these different like layers of paper. And he's screaming, isn't Ned Flanders a jerk or what? And the episode ends. So there had to be more with Homer in the animatic that we didn't see of him planning to outdo Flanders or whatever. Mm-hmm. But like they went with the sweet ending and it was worth it.
It does make no sense that he's in on the planning and doesn't do any of the execution.
Yeah, I mean, it's like he was in the room. They couldn't cut him out.
But
it's still such a great scene. But I'm glad they didn't have that and they instead had this sweet ending. I just like... This became Skinner's catchphrase.
Oh, mercy.
Almost too cool for Skinner.
Oh, mercy.
But, yeah, that's such a Homer Captain Wacky thing. And in any other season 5 episode, that would have been exactly how it ended. It's another one that feels like they were given a chance to show run one episode and like, okay, you guys do it and see how see how it goes. And that feels like something Merkin would have totally gone with.
Yeah.
And that this was so much more tonally close to what season 7 and 8 were about.
Being a young but experienced writer and not using the Homer crutch that's so easy to use. Like, push the Homer button for an instant joke. They like taped over the button for this episode. Yeah. He's not. He's barely in this show. Like, there are scenes he's in, but they're not related at all to the plot. They're just like little tiny one-offs to let you know Homer still exists. But that's basically
he might have like less dialogue than Lisa, at least in this episode, and maybe even Marge.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, Homer. It's such a rare underutilization of Homer, but I like that they went for that.
Yeah, I didn't even think about it in those terms. I'm not sure Homer ever has used that little ever again.
No, there's one Halloween segment which Homer has no spoken lines. But that's basically it for no Homers.
Yeah. It definitely feels like a refutation of where the show was in season 5, and that, you know, they talk about it like Deep Space Homer. They were not fans of it. O and W. Like they wanted to ground the show, and that is the opposite of grounding the show.
And you're right, Henry. It feels like a season 7 episode almost, with just how not. I mean, it's still hilarious. It's still weird. It's still out there, but it's much more grounded, and that makes the stakes matter more, and it makes things seem more meaningful.
Nobody does anything impossible. There's no cartoon level violence, which Homer smashing through a wall absolutely would have been.
Yeah.
And there's so many just observations of regular life, which is just very. Oakley and Weinstein's style, which they're so very good at.
Just sitting with these jokes like Skinner picking out the detergent, things like that really make this episode stand out in season 5, which is a good season. This is just so tonally different.
Yeah, this is my favorite season 5 one. I think to this point, boy, Mr. Plow is still kind of my favorite, but this is
top season 5 for me right now.
Yeah, this is number one of season 5, and I don't think the next three will beat it. We're pretty close to the end here.
Yeah.
I'm still, Homer Loves Flanders is still my favorite episode of the season just for how bizarre it is. This is probably my top 5, but
it's really good.
Yeah.
It's just not Stampy.
Yeah.
No, nothing can be. So this is the
our 100th. Hey, Mo, look at that better episode.
So this is our 100th episode, everybody, of Talking Simpsons. We made it to 100, and we're going to do 100 more, possibly more after that. Don't you worry, and thank you so much for supporting us. Months ago, I had something commissioned as a gift to give out on our 100th episode to my fellow co-hosts. Sorry, Dave, I didn't know you'd be here.
That's okay.
So I commissioned this a few months ago when I knew we'd at least be going to 100.
You thought we'd make it this far?
Yes, I mean, we were at like 87 when I commissioned this. And this is before I knew we were going to have a Patreon. And now it's even better, I think, as a celebration of our Patreon, which is doing so great. Patreon.com/TalkingSimpsons. You made this happen, everybody. We're working so hard. We have so many recordings scheduled. But this is my gift to my fellow hosts. So for Chris, I want to put these on our page too, because this is all visual. So
pictures will be on the page on lasertimepodcast.com.
My favorite Simpsons game is Simpsons Arcade, so I took the liberty of getting everybody.
Oh,
what?
Perler beats Sprite Art. I gave Chris Bart as the devil. When you die, a devil Bart appears.
Yeah, I love this.
Oh my gosh.
This is my spirit animal. And then
For Henry, he gets Bartman.
Oh my god.
Wonderful.
I love this.
And I got one for myself.
Homer. Oh my god.
Punching Homer from the arcade. So, yes. These were all, I mean, we'll have pictures of these on the show post, hopefully. But these were made by Jasmine Kelly. And you can find her on Etsy as Top Tier Perlers. Go to Top Tier Perlers on Etsy. Just search for that. You'll find her work. She does great stuff. It's not expensive. She'll do any kind of sprite art you want. And these are so great. And I'm so happy I gave these away on our 100th episode. And we're celebrating our Patreon, too.
Thank you so much, Bob. Yes,
so,
that's so nice.
Easy to hang.
This is a memento of all the great work we've done together.
Chris,
and
you could hang it off your neck and it would be a perler necklace.
Why didn't no one say I'm hanging on me wool?
I think that's a pretty gear joke.
Thank you.
That is great. I can't wait to put these up.
I'm so excited to have these not sitting in my apartment. I've been waiting to give these away for a month now. And it's a great celebration of ourselves. And if you allow us to be self-indulgent, thank you.
Thanks to patrons. I can't seem to get Bob and Henry out of here now. There's so many things happening.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
Chris did charge us some rent this week, and it was kind of outrageous. I know this is San Francisco, but come on.
But yeah, patreon.com/TalkingSimpsons if you want to support us, and you'll see all these things, or you'll hear episodes a week early if you're not already. If you can't wait to hear the next one, it's up on there now.
And if you subscribe now, you will have like 20 things to listen to. Granted, 13 of those are at season 1, which we have posted there too. If you're already a LaserTime Patreon, you might have heard those before, but we're recording so many bonus episodes. We have recording scheduled for like the week to bank a bunch of Talking Critic episodes. You made Talking Critic happen. We're at like 5K now. I think think I honestly think we might make that second goal by the end of the summer.
I would love to, everybody, because I definitely want to do that show where we talk about just animation each time like that. I think we'd all love to do that here, like just random episodes of animation. And you can make that happen. Man, thank you very much, Bob.
Yes, I'm glad you guys like it. So yeah, I've been your host, Bob Mackey. You can find me on Twitter as Bob Servo. My other podcast is Retronauts. Go to Retronauts.com or search for Retronauts in your podcast machine. Every week it's a new retro gaming topic, occasionally an extra episode on Friday, a smaller, and by smaller I mean it's an hour long episode. Nice. And together, the Talking Simpsons team, we've done several Simpsons games as Retronauts episodes. We've done Bart versus the Space Mutants, we've done the Simpsons arcade game, and Bart's Nightmare, and more to come in the future. So if you're new to the Retronauts, start with those, or just pick a topic you like and listen. I guarantee you'll like it. So that's Retronauts on anywhere. You can listen to it with any podcast thing. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
And follow me on Twitter at HENEREYG, and that's where I tweet out new episode announcements for this show, and also when we post new stuff on the Patreon as well. Though, of course, if you subscribe to the Patreon, you should just be getting updates every time too, and you can get those podcasts in your podcast device with a special RSS feed that they give out when you sign up. And if you have any extra questions about it, hey, feel free to at me on Twitter and I'll probably reply to it.
And I might reply if you leave a comment on lasertimepodcast.com, where this show and many others live. Dave and I are supported on Patreon as well, patreon.com/lasertime. Bunch of fun extra stuff for you. I think with both of our Patreons, we pretty much could own your entire day if we needed to. But, yeah, check out Lasertime. We did a show recently on the Legacy of the Simpsons. I can't promote the farts episode enough. Oh, I'm so glad we did that. Thank God we even have a Simpsons fart in there. Go listen.
And there's also 30-20-10, the show that looks back 10, 20, and 30 years in history. Just like Bart said, we'd be laughing at this show 20 years later. Well, we are. Yeah, that show and this one.
It was true. It was true. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. 100 episodes. Hooray! Woo! We'll be back next week with The Boy Who Knew Too Much. See you then.
Infotainment.